Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today I'm going to be joined by Chris Donovan. I've gotten to know Chris really well over the years as he's been an active participant in the Analytics Leadership Consortium program for IIA that I've helped manage. He's always been a solid contributor to the group and is eager to share his ideas on what it takes to manage an analytics organization. He recently made a move to become EVP and Chief Data and Information Officer for Medical Mutual, a regional health insurer in Ohio. Prior to that recent move, he had spent nearly 30 years with the world-famous Cleveland Clinic in Ohio in various roles, culminating with his tenure as Executive Director of Enterprise Information Management and Analytics. He and his team drove a lot of very interesting, innovative, and impactful analytics over the years, including some really nice work to help support the organization as it was strained through the COVID crisis. Chris also volunteers his time to serve on some boards of nonprofit and professional organizations. He's got a bachelor's in business administration and accounting from the University of Miami in Ohio and an MBA from Cleveland State University. And with that, let's welcome Chris to the show. Well, thanks for joining me on the show today, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. Really happy to be here.
I always like to start with delving a little bit into how people got into this area of analytics and data science. Now, you had an undergrad business and accounting degree and an MBA. So what initially drew you over more to the data and analytics side of things?
Yeah, I kind of have a different path, I think, to get into this space. You know, I started doing cost accounting. So I came out with an undergrad accounting degree, went to the Cleveland Clinic. So started working in healthcare right away in my career. And we had an old, you know, mainframe cost accounting system back in the early 90s. And really what that became was kind of what we called decision support back then. So it was a tool that let us understand the cost of delivering care to our patients, let us understand product lines and profitability and that kind of stuff. And it was really kind of a pre even like business intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. It was essentially an enterprise data warehouse. It pulled together all kinds of information. And that's really where it all started, was building that tool, working in that tool, doing that reporting. Kind of led me down the path eventually towards analytics and advanced analytics many years later.
And so does that imply was your very first role then more in a finance role that you ended up doing that analysis, which pulled you over then?
Yeah, it's funny. I was at the clinic for 30 years. The entire time I was actually in finance, even when I was leading our analytics work, it was just kind of how it was structured. It grew up out of that decision support, which in many hospitals did come out of finance. They were the first ones kind of interested in cost accounting and understanding profitability. And then what got wrapped around that over time was clinical information, demographic information, you know, all the stuff that we would think of today as an enterprise data warehouse. So I was always in finance, always had a foot in that world until actually I changed roles recently.
Yeah, what's interesting then, you know, of course, Cleveland Clinic's obviously healthcare, and then you've made this recent switch that's also in the overall healthcare space. What drew you into healthcare initially? Did you seek it out, or it happened to be where you got a job and then you liked it?
A little bit of both, actually. You know, I, as an accounting undergrad back then, I think it was the Big Six or maybe Big Eight, I can't remember. Accounting firms was kind of the typical track that you would follow. And I knew I didn't really want to do traditional accounting. I didn't want to be an auditor. It just wasn't really what I was interested in. So I kind of sought out other differentiated opportunities. I had been actually a summer intern doing like chart data entry at the clinic. And so I knew a few people. And so it was an easy place for me to reach out and say, hey, are there any kinds of opportunities using this accounting skill set? And through that, I got connected to a job doing that cost accounting and working on that decision support team. So it was the type of work and the mission of healthcare has always been attractive to me. You know, I want the work that I do to be meaningful and I want to contribute back to the, you know, the communities in which we live. And certainly working at the Cleveland Clinic, I was able to do that. And now in my new role at Medical Mutual, I feel equally able to do that.
So one thing, having been 30 years at a company, which isn't the most common, a thing today as it was when we were younger. What did you find? Because, you know, you worked your way up over years. To your point, it wasn't even really an analytics team at all back when we were just starting our careers. It evolved under you. You end up, you know, with a large organization and your executive director role and such. How did you manage your career over those years for maybe either students that are watching or people earlier in their careers? What did you do to guide yourself from that starting point into where you ended?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten asked this question before, and I have to say, you know, I never really had a career plan. Like, I never said I want to be a chief data officer or a chief financial officer or anything like that. Early on in my career, my goal was just whatever job I had, whatever role I was in, I wanted to be the best one of those. So when I was a, you know, junior accountant and a decision support accountant and all those things, as I went through my career, my goal was I'm just going to be the best one. And so learning that, learning the roles, being really good at it, that opened up opportunities, created the next opportunity for me. About 15, 20 years into my career is when I realized, you know, that I really enjoy this data thing. And I had kind of seen where where the world was going in terms of BI reporting, advanced analytics. And that is when I was more intentional. I actually went to my boss at the time and said, hey, I've been focusing on this, you know, traditional decision support stuff. I think we can take that and grow it. I had some other responsibilities at that time that I kind of made a deal to say, why don't we hand those off to somebody else? And then we can commit to not only doing this traditional work that we've been doing, but, you know, leading the Cleveland Clinic down this path of advanced analytics, BI and reporting at the time. And luckily I was able to get acceptance to do that. I had really good partners at the clinic. There were some other folks and colleagues that I worked with for a long time who had a similar kind of passion and vision for doing this. And so I was able to kind of collect those folks, and we were able to work together across different disciplines. And so for me, it was never really about laying out a specific career plan, like 2 years here, 2 years there, et cetera. It was always about execute where I can, be the best, whatever role I'm in, and then take advantage of opportunities as they arise out of that.
You know, I think that's some good advice for others, right? If you, at the end of the day, you can have all the ambition and all the plan, but without doing good work and being that person that people knows will come through, then, you know, the plan right. isn't going to happen. So, I'm sure, you know, obviously based on where you've netted out, you were able to do the good work and show that you could contribute, and then those opportunities would come your way, because you'd be on people's mind.
Yeah, exactly. And I have seen, you know, sometimes where people, there's nothing wrong with being ambitious or having a career plan. You know, that's an equally good way to do it. I think what people need to avoid is worrying more about their next job than their current job. Right. And some people can get caught up in that. And I think there's value in just, you know, if you want to have that balance and be thinking about where you're going, that's great. But make sure you're delivering where you are and take advantage of that role to learn as much as you can. Right. So that you can carry all that education, all that learning experience into each subsequent role.
Yeah, I love that line. I wrote that one down. Don't worry more about your next job than your current one. It sounds on the surface like it'd be a ridiculous thing to say in some way, but yet you're exactly right. I think we've all seen people who are clearly focused on what their next job is, and even right. guiding where they focus on today's job based on that, which sometimes that aligns with what's best for the company that you're working for. And sometimes it's really aligning with you and at the expense of the company. And so
right.
I think people who do that tend to get found out mostly over time, but it's definitely a factor.
Well, and I think there's a potential that you can kind of peak when you're doing that, right? Because you might make decisions to change jobs more quickly. You might look at another opportunity that maybe you're, you know, not really ready for in some cases. And so if that happens a lot, you're going to end up in a place where you're not really ready for, you know, some subsequent leap into senior leadership or a leadership role, because you just don't have the depth that you need. So, you know, everyone can take a different career path. There's lots of way to do it, but I would say that's something people should be aware of. You know, that to me, learning, gathering that experience, and being able to carry that forward has always been a key to success for me.
So one thing that you hinted at, and I think even 5-7 years ago, if you had asked 100 people in the field which industries are grossly behind in analytics, right, I think healthcare would have been in the top one or two of almost everybody's list. But there has been some substantial progress. It seems to have come in a burst. So from what you've seen, what's some of the biggest changes in the healthcare industry as it relates to both the usage of data, the creation of analytics and so forth that you've seen over your tenure?
Well, I think on the provider side, certainly the implementation of electronic medical records. So just the availability of the data and to some degree, the standardization of that data, at least site to site, was a big accelerator. Early in my career, all that data was sitting in mainframe applications. It was really hard to get out. It took a lot of time to standardize and normalize it and to use it. As most places have implemented electronic medical records, that created a huge repository of data to take advantage of. Now, it came along with a lot of challenges too, because it's a huge repository of data with a lot of duplications and inconsistencies and that kind of stuff. I think the, healthcare is a conservative industry by nature. I mean, we have a lot of information about patients and members. It's very sensitive and are appropriately protective of that. And so there was kind of a slow movement into cloud technologies where you saw a lot of the early adopters. They were native cloud, you know, a long time ago. And it took a long time to figure out, given HIPAA and regulatory and compliance requirements and potential penalties, it took a long time for healthcare organizations to figure out how to navigate all that. And so I think largely now people have kind of figured that out, and people feel a lot more safe about putting information in the cloud. There's a lot more controls around it. So that definitely accelerated it. And the technology and the capabilities just changed so quickly in the last 5 years. You know, when you think about what we can do today versus what we were talking about 5 years ago, it's just tremendously different.
One thing I think about as it relates to healthcare, you know, there's the old, it's an old school term, but the term decision support. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that there's so much potential if you think about analytics being decision support for doctors in the true sense of the word, not meaning the reporting systems that we meant decision support, but truly like when the radiologist has an AI opinion on whether there is or isn't cancer in a film is one example, right? That can make them, if they're seeing the same thing and that was their gut as well, that gives them that extra confidence in that decision. So, that's one thing where I sometimes people complain, well, I don't want algorithms to make my healthcare decisions. Well, maybe not, but certainly if I have a choice myself between my doctor just making the decision all on their own or getting a second opinion from another doctor, I'll take a second opinion, or getting a second opinion from an algorithm, I'll take that second opinion as well. Just the more data points to make that decision about something that could greatly influence my health long-term, I'm all for it. What have you seen as patient and doctor acceptance of that, that support model bigger than it used to be, or is it still a struggle?
I think it's changed a lot, even in the last 3 years, I would say. Certainly on the clinician side, clinicians are becoming much more open to clinical decision support, right? Like you said, the term we always tried to use was kind of augmented intelligence, right? I'm sure you've heard that in other industries as well. But not that you're going to have an algorithm make a clinical decision, but like you described, how can it bring better information to the clinician to help them make a care decision? And I think that the technology, again, because the technology is getting so much better, the clinicians are growing much more comfortable with it. A lot of clinicians are excited about it and learning about it. So now you have clinically led, trials, clinically led research, clinically led efforts to use these. And that just starts to knock down a lot of barriers on that space. So yeah, I think clinicians for sure, patients, I think it's become such a part of our world. I don't think patients are as hesitant about it, certainly, than what they used to be. I don't think patients want AI making their healthcare decisions either, but I think they're open to the application of these technologies to help them get better care.
Yeah. I mean, I view it as the doctor can always override whatever the AI said anyway. So it's one of these things where my worst case is the exact same decision, but the best case is something makes the doctor at least think twice and either tweak what they do a little bit or back to it. Maybe there's like two rather aggressive treatment options and the choice is an important one. And the more that they're able to tell me with confidence, I really think this is right, I'm all for it. So I'm with you. I think it's going to continue to evolve and mainly just everybody's used to analytics being around them as consumers these days. Whereas 20 years ago, people were freaked out about mail pieces in the mail being targeted to them. And
right.
You know, now everyone's used to just everything customized everywhere based on analytics.
Yeah, and I think the other benefit that people are excited about is that it should be able to bring, it should be more efficient, right? So access is obviously a huge issue in healthcare and getting people in and getting stuff done in a timely manner, you know, reviewing scans, providing back, you know, image results, all those kinds of things have the possibility of being accelerated and made much more efficient with these technologies. And so I think people will see that as a positive as well.
So you recently, you've already mentioned it, you recently made a big switch over to Medical Mutual. Maybe just real quick, because I know there are, you know, in healthcare, there's most players tend to be regional. So if you're not from Ohio, you might not know about it. Maybe just give a quick overview what they're about. And then, you know, what led you to decide to go over there to the insurance side of the house from the care side of the house?
Yeah, like you mentioned, Medical Mutual is a regional payer insurance company here, headquartered in Northeast Ohio. We have operations across the state, and we have some other subsidiary businesses around life insurance and dental practice insurance and some other things as well. You know, I'd say a lot of the things about Medical Mutual are very similar to my previous organization. It's anchored in the community. They're very important in the communities in which we serve, and that really speaks to me. I'm pretty much a lifelong Cleveland guy, and it's been a part of Cleveland for my entire life. So I have a lot of respect for the organization and the work that they do in the community and the mission. It is a mutual, which means it's not owned by shareholders. It's owned by the policyholders. So it's kind of in that same, you know, it's not a nonprofit, but it's kind of in that same nonprofit vein that means something to me. So all the proceeds go back into the organization and should benefit the policyholders. And so that was very attractive. And they were building a team and setting out on a strategic plan that was really interesting and really exciting for me. And so it was just a good time for me to make a change, and it turned out to be a really good opportunity. So it was just kind of a fit, not something I was necessarily looking for 30 years at one place, but really good timing.
So what was the experience like, you know, 30 years at one place, as you mentioned, where you pretty much knew most everybody and most everything. And then you come in, you know, in this case, chief data and information officer, super high up in an organization. And now you're brand new and you don't necessarily know everybody, probably don't know most of the people, don't know everything about how it works. What was that experience like? And what were some of the personal challenges you had in figuring out how to navigate this, you know, this new role with all the various unknowns and new people and processes to deal with?
Yeah, that's definitely been a challenge. It's also been really exciting and energizing. So like you mentioned, 30 years at one place, I knew who to call for just about everything. I knew why we made, you know, this decision and the three decisions that preceded that over the last 10 years. You know, I just had a depth having been in one place for a long time. And so coming here, I also had to learn a whole different side of the industry. You know, 30 years on the provider side, had good depth and breadth of understanding of how that side worked, and coming over to a payer side, it's very different. I kind of joke with people here. It's like I speak Spanish and everyone at Medical Mutual speaks Italian. So it's like, I kind of understand what they're saying, but the vocabulary is a little bit different, new set of acronyms. And so that's been a challenge. You know, I've had to do a lot of learning, crash course on how stuff works on this side of the industry. I'll tell you, it's been made a lot easier just because there's such great people here. And so my colleagues on the executive team, the folks on my teams that I'm running, the people across the organization are just have been welcoming. They have deep knowledge. So I have no lack of people that I can turn to and ask a question. And I do have to ask a lot of questions because there's just things I don't understand. I'm still learning, but they've made it really easy to come over and get up to speed.
Well, as you look back these past 30 years, if you had to pick one, maybe two traits of yours that you think have most helped you to succeed and to, you know, achieve what you have, what do you think those might be?
I think I would start with what I said before, really concentrating on trying to be the best of whatever I am. So how do I, you know, apply everything I can to what I'm doing right now? How do I learn as much as I can? How do I apply past learnings, bring that to the table. And I'd say the second is really trying to be collaborative. So I try to work, you know, across borders, try to work across teams, you know, reporting relationships and ownership of stuff. And, you know, that's never been a big driver for me. I'm very comfortable in kind of hybrid, federated, dotted line relationships. And I think that's helped me. That's benefited me because it allows me to build those partnerships. It allows me to connect with people, like I said, across silos where there might've been historic tensions or challenges in doing that. And so just being open to that and not worrying about who reports to whom and, you know, that kind of stuff has been, I think, a big plus for me.
I think that's a great concept for students or people early in their career to think about too, because, you know, even take the military, it's perceived as, you know, super top down, right? You get an order, you go do that order. And there is truth to that. They're probably more top down than most, but having not been in the military, just knowing how big those organizations are, I can promise you there's still a lot of the unofficial stuff before that order comes down. There's people whispering in the person's ear what that order maybe should be and jockeying for a position in a real world corporate setting. You know, what you said is very true. There's the official hierarchies, but there's an immense ability to influence things, you know, alongside those hierarchies. And if you focus on that, not only do you get to know a lot of people, but you actually can come to find you're able to influence at a much greater rate than if you were just trying to follow up and down your straight line.
Yeah, I remember early in my career, I was talking to somebody that was mentoring me and talking about this, you know, these ideas of relationships and building relationships and working together. And I never forget this. Like he said to me, we were talking about building trust, you know, across different teams and with different people in the organization. And I was frustrated with some stuff that was going on. And he basically stopped me and said, you know, in order to get trust, in order to earn trust, you have to be trustworthy first. And so it was really about how do you build those relationships and how do you create, you know, that trustworthy relationship that you're going to have with somebody. That's when you can get there. Most people aren't going to necessarily give you trust initially. Most people are going to have you earn it. And so that gets back to that. How do you interact with people? How do you support them? How do you work across those silos?
And that correlator to that then would be when you don't know someone all that well, you better go out of your way to make sure that you don't do anything that can be perceived as untrustworthy, because once they have a negative bias towards you, it can be incredibly difficult to overcome that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've always tried to build in my reputation at work is that, you know, I try to give my honest opinion. I try to base that opinion on what I think is best for the company, not what's best for me or for my team. And not everyone will agree with me, right? Like, I'm not always right. But I think I was able to build a reputation that I wasn't saying that because it was something I thought would benefit me personally. And so that's how you can build trust with people. You know, they understand your motivations, they understand where you're coming from, and you're straightforward and honest with them. You know, that goes a long way.
So one thing I know that over time, as you age in your career and you rise through ranks and so forth, the things that specifically motivate you day to day and get you excited tend to change as well, just like with everything else in your life. So if you were to wake up these days and you're looking at your calendar for the day, like what would make it a fun and exciting day? What are the things that really energize you the most today?
I would say two things. You know, one of the things I've really enjoyed in this new role is as I came over as part of the executive team here. And so I'd really enjoy the opportunity to be involved in understanding, setting, and executing on the enterprise strategy. So, you know, most of my career, I was executing strategic priorities and trying to build towards that plan. But it's been really fun to actually be at the table and in the room and having those conversations and getting the chance to engage with, you know, just some of the smartest people that I've worked with to actually help the organization set its course. So that's very energizing for me. That's been new and challenging and really exciting. And also just the team, like building the team and getting to know my team, bringing people in. So just that operational kind of leadership role that I have as we're really trying to chart some new courses as an organization. It's a lot of change management. It's a lot of what you would expect in an organization that's kind of pivoting and building a new roadmap. So those kinds of things energize me. I like the people aspects. I like working with people. I like building those relationships. And I like being part of that leadership team that gets to, you know, be involved in strategy.
So, you know, I don't think we've ever talked about this. since you took this role, but and I don't know the answer to it, which is, did you come into a role where there was substantively a team in place and you're having to continue to grow it and tune it? Or did you come in where part of your role was having to create that team from various pieces that existed, but that weren't yet cohesive?
It's a little bit of both, because I came into this role and I have kind of a traditional CIO role where the technology, so IT is under this role. That's an existing team. We have a very strong chief technology officer that helps lead that team and was in place. And so it was building that relationship and trying to build trust with that team and see how we want to evolve that. But then also with the mandate of building out an enterprise data and analytics capability, which we did not have historically. We have pockets of excellence, people doing this work, but there's really no coherent enterprise approach to it. And so it was a little bit of both sides of that, building new, creating new capabilities, and also kind of nurturing and stewarding an already high performing, IT team.
Well, before we run out of time here, maybe we'll close with one. If you had to pick a trend in the data science space, it could be one that you think will impact healthcare in your organization or just something you see in the market, either what your choice, but what would be one thing over the next 3 to 5 years that you think today is going to end up having a big impact for us?
Yeah, this probably isn't a super original idea, but I mean, just generative AI and large language models. In my 30 years of my career, I've never seen anything move this fast into, people using it and putting it into production and experimenting with it. And I think the potential of that technology is just tremendous. The increases we can get in productivity, the way we can exchange data and understand that data between players in our space, I think there's the possibilities are huge. And so I'd say that's probably going to be the most transformative thing that we'll see over the next 3 years.
And so, not asking you to give any of the details, but I'm going to presume that that's also one of the technologies that you all are experimenting with at Medical Mutual as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's going to be a lot of use cases for that. So as we build out this program, that's definitely on our radar.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you for your time today. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me. And I think your insights were terrific. So thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate you inviting me onto the show.